be reading two passages tonight. The first one is Matthew 25, verses 41 through 46. Then he will also say to those on his left, "Depart from me, accursed ones, into the eternal fire which has been prepared for the devil and his angels. For I was hungry, and you gave me nothing to eat. I was thirsty, and you gave me nothing to drink. I was a stranger, and you did not invite me in. Naked, and you did not clothe me. Sick and in prison, and you did not visit me." Then they themselves also will answer, "Lord, when did we see you hungry or thirsty or a stranger or naked or sick or in prison and did not take care of you?" Then he will answer them, "Truly I say to you, the extent that you did not do it to one of the least of these, you did not do it to me." These will go into eternal punishment, but the righteous into eternal life. And the second passage is Proverbs 28, verse 27. "He who gives to the poor will never want, but he who shuts his eyes will have many curses."
Tonight we're going to be looking for a few minutes at some of the applications from the book of Proverbs that we see laid out for us in the New Testament. I was going through recently and reading the book of Proverbs. There's a lot that stood out to me that either it's almost a direct quote or the same principle comes back over and Jesus makes reference to them time and time again. And it's one of those things that kind of sticks with you, like the phrase that Jesus said often to those that were coming to test him, the Sadducees and the Pharisees and the other lawyers, "Have you not read that it was written?" And he makes mention of Old Testament passages and says, "This is how you should have thought about it and made application to it." When I was reading through it, I've got at least a whole page worth of applications and proverbs that have New Testament applications or explanations to them. So there's quite often that even the teachings that Jesus made, either in parables or through his rebukes of others, he's saying these are things you should have already known. Kind of like we had mentioned in our class this morning when the blind man said, "We know that God does not hear the prayers of sinners, but this man he heard." Well, that was something from the book of Proverbs that he was likely very familiar with. And again, it's something that we see time and time again that these people should have been so very familiar with some of these basic principles with it. And I think it's interesting and worth our time to consider in light of those certain passages as Jesus had described to those when he says, "Have you not read?" And he's writing to them in Matthew chapter 22 and verse 29 as he's speaking. The Sadducees have come up and begin testing him with a question regarding the resurrection. And Jesus says, "Have you not read concerning the resurrection from the dead? Have you not read what was spoken to you by God saying, 'I am the God of Abraham, the God of Isaac, and the God of Jacob'? God is not the God of the dead, but of the living." Again, he's saying, God has made this statement before you. He is not the God of the dead, but of the living. I am the God of these men. And yet he says, "Yet you say there is no resurrection from the dead," speaking to the Sadducees. "Have you not read? Have you not made that application?" Again, over in Matthew chapter 12 is another very interesting one in regards to a question that was being addressed to Jesus when his disciples were walking through the field on a Sabbath. They were plucking heads of grain and eating them on the Sabbath, something that the religious leaders, the chief priests of this time in Matthew chapter 12, came to him in question and said, "What is this that your disciples are doing?" And Jesus' rebuke is very strong here. Matthew chapter 12 and in verse 3, he says, "But he said to them, 'Have you not read what David did when he was hungry? He and those who were with him, how he entered the house of God and ate the showbread, which was not lawful for him to eat, nor for those who were with him, but only for the priests. Or have you not read in the law that on the Sabbath the priests in the temple profane the Sabbath and are blameless? Yet I say to you that in this place there is one greater than the temple. But if you had known what this means, 'I desire mercy and not sacrifice,' you would not have condemned the guiltless." So here are three instances now where Jesus is pointing out to them, you who are the chief priests, you who should be so very well familiar with the scriptures and understanding of them, have you not read? He says that twice. And then the last one, "But if you had known what this means," and he gives a quote saying, "I desire mercy and not sacrifice," and then his condemnation to them, "You would not have condemned the guiltless." So here they were making a condemnation to those who were plucking these heads of grain while they were walking with Jesus. They were feeding themselves because they were hungry. And Jesus calls them guiltless. But yet he's making a condemnation because these who were questioning did not understand the correct application of that Old Testament principle that was given to them. I desire mercy and not sacrifice. And again, I've only listed a portion of them here in this first one. There's a few that I've left off. I'd like to take a few minutes this evening and look at a couple of these. Again, not all of them are word for word direct quotes from the Proverbs into the New Testament, but I think it's worth our time to consider some of these applications. In particular, over in Proverbs chapter 2, Proverbs chapter 2 and in verse 21 says, "For the upright will dwell in the land, and the blameless will remain in it. But the wicked will be cut off from the earth, and the unfaithful will be uprooted from it." Again, it's a fairly simple principle. When you think back even to the time of Israel, who was it? Which generation was it that entered in and possessed the land of Canaan first after their exodus from Egypt? Was it that first generation whom God said were unfaithful to Him, despite all the many miracles that He had shown to them? No, they did not dwell in the land. They did not inhabit the land. They never received that land that they had been promised because they had no faith in God. And yet, it was the next generation that did dwell in the land, and they remained in it. And in like manner, Matthew chapter 5, you'll notice that many of these applications I have noted either in Matthew 5, 6, or 7, and then the replicant or the parallel passage from Luke as well often mentions some of these same ideas. But in Matthew chapter 5 and verse 5, "Blessed are the meek, for they shall inherit the earth." Again, who was it that would inherit the earth in Proverbs chapter 2? "The upright will dwell in the land, and the blameless will remain in it." Again, Jesus makes allusion, "Blessed are the meek, for they shall inherit the earth." Again, over in Proverbs chapter 3 and in verse 4, it speaks about how one is to grow in the nurturing, or how one is to grow in the relationship. He says, "Let not mercy and truth forsake you, and so find favor and good understanding in the sight of God and of man." What familiar passage comes to mind that we've been studying about on Wednesday nights when we talk about finding favor in the eyes of God and of man? Again, that's Proverbs chapter 3 and in verse 4. "And so find favor and high esteem in the sight of God and man." In Luke chapter 2, we have the example of Jesus. As he was growing, and it speaks about the time of his youth, what did he do? But he sought to grow in favor both with man and with God. So again, we have application of that proverb shown to us in the life of our Lord. Continuing on, we see some of these others from Proverbs 3 and in verse 6. "In all your ways acknowledge him, and he shall make straight your paths." What's Matthew 7 and verse 14 talk about? Those who would seek the two different paths that you can follow in. Matthew 7 and verse 14, verse 13, it says, "Enter by the narrow gate, for wide is the gate and broad is the way that leads to destruction. There are many who go in by it. Because narrow is the gate, and difficult is the way which leads to life, and there are few who find it." Again, the application from Proverbs. "In all your ways acknowledge Him, and He shall make straight your paths." When we put God first, and we consider Him and acknowledge Him in all of our ways, we walk through that narrow gate, that straight path that the Lord has provided for us. It's much easier than going through that broad path that leads to destruction. Again, there's some other these examples here for us to peruse, but in Proverbs chapter 10 and verse 25, Proverbs 10 and 25 is an interesting one. He says, in verse 23, "To do evil is like sport to a fool, but a man of understanding has wisdom." Again, there's the key phrase for it, the one who is wise. "The fear of the wicked will come upon him, and the desire of the righteous will be granted. When the whirlwind passes by, the wicked is no more, but the righteous has an everlasting foundation." Again, what type of a parallel passage that we're so very familiar with does that bring to mind? It's the same type of imagery. Here this one spoke that the man who has understanding, but a man of understanding has wisdom, but the fool is somebody different. The whirlwind or the storm passes by and the wicked is no more. Matthew chapter 7, verse 24 says, "Therefore, whoever hears these sayings of mine and does them, I will liken him to a wise man who built his house on the rock. And the rain descended, the floods came, and the winds blew and beat on that house, and it did not fall, for it was founded on the rock. But everyone who hears these sayings of mine and does not do them will be like a foolish man who built his house on the sand, and the floods came, and the winds blew and beat on that house, and it fell, and great was its fall." Again, can you see the comparison between these two passages? The parallelism that's written between the two of them? Seek the wisdom of God and you will stand. That's what how the book of Proverbs starts out, how we're going to end this in a few moments, considering what the wisdom of God benefits for us. But here you have in Matthew 5, 6, and 7, as we've looked through so many of these examples, examples where Jesus is taking principles that should have been very familiar to them, to these people in this audience, in this crowd. He's bringing it back into their mind and saying, again, this is a lesson that you should learn, something that you should be familiar with. And here is yet another example of how it plays out in your life and how it ties in, again, with the rest of the things that he's been teaching. This is the one that I really enjoy, in particular when you consider the way that many of the parables were parallel to a lot of the Proverbs that we have. Again, it's lessons that they would be familiar with and presented to them. But in Proverbs chapter 25, beginning in verse 6. Proverbs 25, verse 6 says, "Do not exalt yourself in the presence of the king, and do not stand in the place of the great. For it is better that he say to you, 'Come up here,' than that you should be put lower in the presence of the prince, whom your eyes have seen." Again, fairly easy proverb and application to be mindful of. But when you look over in Luke chapter 14, Jesus has been invited in to eat with the Pharisee. And then he says in verse 7, "So he told a parable to those who were invited, when he noted how they chose the best places, saying to them, 'When you are invited by anyone to a wedding feast, do not sit down in the best place, lest one more honorable than you be invited by him. And he who invited you and him come and say to you, "Give place to this man." And then you begin with shame to take the lowest place. But when you are invited, go and sit down at the lowest place, so that when he who invited you comes, he may say to you, 'Friend, go up higher.' Then you will have glory in the presence of those who sit at the table with you. For whoever exalts himself will be humbled, and he who humbles himself will be exalted." Again, you can see the same idea brought forward, and Jesus is rebuking these people that have come to eat with him into this one person's house, saying, "Why are you choosing the best place for yourself, considering so highly of yourself?" Again, it's that same proverb that reminds them to not do so. Similarly, in Proverbs 25 and verse 15, we have example of the unrighteous judge and the widow who brought her case before him. In Proverbs chapter 25 and verse 15, it says, "By long forbearance, a ruler is persuaded, and a gentle tongue breaks a bone." Application of that's over in Luke chapter 18. Luke chapter 18 and verse 1. He says, "Then he spoke a parable to them, that men always ought to pray and not lose heart, saying, 'There was in a certain city a judge who did not fear God nor regard man. Now there was a widow in that city, and she came to him, saying, "Get justice for me from my adversary." And he would not for a while. But afterward he said within himself, 'Though I do not fear God nor regard man, yet because this widow troubles me, I will avenge her, lest by her continual coming she weary me.'" Again, you see the type of application that Jesus is making. And it's interesting to note how often these parables are teaching things that the people should have known. And when I read through this, it almost speaks out again. Have you not read those things that were written before, when they're being reprimanded for the very things that they should be familiar with? Again, Proverbs 28 and 3, we won't take the time to read through that, but it's the parable of the unforgiving servant, the one who had been forgiven much and yet was unwilling to forgive those who owed him the debts that had been forgiven, just as he had been forgiven. Similarly, we see the same thing coming in the form of rebukes from the Proverbs. In Proverbs chapter 24, and in verse 28, He says, "Do not be a witness against your neighbor without cause. For would you deceive with your lips? Do not say, 'I will do to him just as he has done to me. I will render to the man according to his work.'" In Matthew chapter 5 and in verse 38 begins with Jesus saying, "You have heard it said, an eye for an eye and tooth for a tooth, but I say unto you." And he continues on with a discourse speaking of how we ought to not return evil for evil, but rather evil for good, and return all of that back in so that we do good to those and not render to the man according to his work. Again, in Proverbs chapter 25 and verse 8, "Do not go hastily to court, for what will you do in the end when your neighbor has put you to shame? Debate your case with your neighbor and do not disclose the secret to another, lest he who hears it expose your shame and your reputation be ruined." Again, words of wisdom shown out for us in Matthew chapter 5. Matthew chapter 5, when Jesus again is speaking on the Sermon on the Mount, beginning in verse 25, Matthew 5 and in verse 25, he says, "Agree with your adversary quickly while you are on the way with him, lest your adversary deliver you to the judge hand you over to the officer, and you be thrown into prison." Again, we're reading a lot of these to draw out the similarity between them. But let's pause and take just a moment to consider what was the response to this preaching by Jesus. In Matthew chapter 7, in verse 28, it says, "And so it was when Jesus had ended these sayings that the people were astonished at his teaching, for he taught them as one having authority and not as the scribes." Again, that's a passage that we're very familiar with. But what was Jesus doing throughout so much of this Sermon on the Mount here? He was taking principles that they had been taught all their lives. He was showing them the things that they should be familiar with from the law. And he was saying, this is the way that you should be making application of this. God has shown you what is right and good to do in your life. And yet, when Jesus is speaking of it and showing them how to make that type of an application, the people were astonished at his teaching because of the way that he delivered it to them and described this type of ideas to them, not the way that the scribes who simply read it back to them were doing, or the ways that they would try to levy things upon them as the Sadducees and Pharisees were doing, as Jesus pointed out to them, "Have you not read?" so many times, as he points out their misunderstanding from Scripture too. Again, in Proverbs 25, 21 through 22, it's another rebuke. "If your enemy is hungry, give him bread to eat, and if he is thirsty, give him water to drink. For so you will heap coals of fire on his head, and the Lord will reward you." That one is quoted for us in Romans chapter 12 and verse 20. Paul makes allusion to it, of how we ought to live in peace with those around about us, and all that is within us to strive to live for peace. And Jesus also makes mention of it in Matthew chapter 5. And then there are also the continued rebukes from the Proverbs that are quoted throughout other passages too. Proverbs 26 and verse 11, "As a dog returns to his own vomit, so a fool repeats his folly." And it's interesting to note how 2 Peter chapter 2, how the Apostle Peter uses that same proverb to make the application that so are those who would reject the ways of the Lord and go back, forsake the way of the Lord, and go back to what they had once known in the world instead. As the proverb writer puts it, "So a fool repeats his folly." Proverbs chapter 27 and verse 1, "Do not boast about tomorrow, for you do not know what a day will bring." James makes that same application for us in James chapter 4 and verse 13, speaking about how that is boasting about that day and the things that you do not understand, and speaking haughtily of the things that come before them. But again, in Proverbs chapter 28 and verse 24 is an interesting one for us. In Proverbs chapter 28, again, this one comes from a very sharp rebuke that Jesus made to the people. Proverbs 28 and verse 24, he says, "Whoever robs his father or his mother and says it is no transgression, the same is companion to a destroyer." And what was Jesus rebuking the people for doing in Matthew chapter 15? They had created a tradition among themselves, saying that I don't have to care for my father or my mother if I say that whatever they would have gotten from me, I've dedicated to the temple. In Matthew chapter 15 and verse 3, Matthew 15 and 3 says, He answered and said to them, "Why do you also transgress the commandment of God because of your tradition? For God commanded, saying, 'Honor your father and your mother,' and 'He who curses father or mother, let him be put to death.' But you say, 'Whoever says to his father or mother, whatever profit you might have received from me is a gift to God,' then he need not honor his father or mother. This you have made, thus you have made the commandment of God of no effect by your tradition." Again, it's a principle that they were taught 1,000 years earlier and prior to this. Something that has been recorded as something wise for us to consider. And Jesus is saying, you're negating the ways of God, the commandment of God, in order for this tradition of yours. And as the proverb writer puts it, you are a companion to a destroyer. Again, there are many other warnings that come from the Proverbs that are repeated for us in the New Testament. In Proverbs chapter 28 and verse 10, it says, "Whoever causes the upright to go astray in an evil way, he himself will fall into his own pit." Jesus said similar in Matthew chapter 18 and in verse 6, when he says, "But whoever causes one of these little ones who believe in me to sin, it would be better for him if a millstone were hung around his neck and he were drowned in the depth of the sea." What importance God puts on us being a good example to those around about us and not being a source of stumbling towards those that we come in contact with. And it's a consistent message. Again, that's the other thing for us to take out of all of this, is the consistency that you see between what was expected of the people and under the law of Moses as far as how they lived their life, and then what is expected of us as well. God expects the same type of character, the same seeking after righteousness, the same behavior in us that he always has. Proverbs chapter 28 and verse 27, it says, "He who gives to the poor will not lack, but he who hides his eyes will have many curses." That's what Jared read for us at the beginning of all of this. And you see the application of that? And it's not just a rebuke for neglecting the poor in the land around about them. But in Matthew chapter 25 and verse 41 through 46, what was the end result of those who did not feed him when he was hungry and did not give him water when he thirsted? They did not visit him when he was sick and in prison and away from them. When he did not do those things, Jesus said, "You did not do it even for me if you did not do it for the least of these." The proverb, "He who gives to the poor will not lack, but he who hides his eyes will have many curses." In 29 and 7, "The righteous considers the cause of the poor, but the wicked does not understand such knowledge." Again, what were they called in Matthew chapter 25? "Depart from me, you." Then we have some of the other application of it. It's simply the idea of what it is that we need to do to practice these proverbs. Why it's important for us to consider what it is that we read. When you start out in Proverbs chapter 1, he says, "The Proverbs of Solomon, the son of David, king of Israel, to know wisdom and instruction, to perceive the words of understanding." And then verse 3 is one theme that you see repeated throughout the book of Proverbs and throughout Jesus' teachings as well. To receive the instruction of wisdom, justice, judgment, and equity. To give prudence to the simple and the young man knowledge and discretion. And then what's the point of all of these studies to be familiar with so that we will know how to live with wisdom, with justice, judgment, equity in this life? Verse 7, he says, "The fear of the Lord is the beginning of knowledge, but fools despise wisdom and instruction." Again, when you see how often Jesus rebuked those for not doing the things that they should have known to do, he's in essence saying they don't have a fear of the Lord within them. And if they did, they were doing those things, as Saul said, zealously, but without knowledge, without wisdom, as he described himself, seeking to establish their own righteousness. But here, this is giving instruction of wisdom, justice, judgment, and equity in our life. And then over in chapter 2 and in verse 6, he says, "For the Lord gives wisdom. From his mouth come knowledge and understanding. He stores up sound wisdom for the upright. He is a shield to those who walk uprightly. He guards the paths of justice and preserves the way of his saints. Then you will understand righteousness and justice, equity, and every good path. So again, where does all of it start from? But from a fear and respect of the Lord. Even in Jesus' days, there were those who, the chief priests, the Pharisees, the scribes, and the Sadducees, those who had seemingly devoted their lives to the study of the Word, and yet Jesus says you're lacking in any understanding of it based on how you show your understanding of it in your everyday life. They were doing those things that were so contrary to the ways of God, contrary to wisdom, justice, judgment, equity, that they were showing that they did not have a fear of the Lord within them. So for us, the idea is to try to live our life with wisdom, be mindful of these things and these applications that God has given to us, and consider, if you will, the various ways that God has shown to us these great examples in our lives. Through Jesus' teaching, He shows us this wisdom portrayed both in His life, as we see in Luke chapter 2, that application of how He was growing up, and then also in particular how we ought to avoid the pitfalls that come in this life too, but to walk in wisdom and in the fear of the Lord. Proverbs 29 and 25 says, "The fear of man brings a snare, but whoever trusts in the Lord shall be safe." Again, you have that contrast between the two of them. Put your trust in the Lord, you will be safe. And you see that shown in Jesus' life, the life of the apostles. Many good examples that we have, those who fear the Lord more than they fear man. So I hope this is an encouraging lesson for all of us, but it's an interesting study, so that next time when you look through the book of Proverbs, and we're reading through very soon on Wednesday night, the Sermon on the Mount, consider how often God has shown this same wisdom for us and how He's giving different applications to us and understanding for us as well. Hopefully it'll help in our studies as we go forward. Perhaps I'm speaking to those in the number tonight, though, who have a need to respond to the gospel's call in some way. Have the opportunity at this time, if sin has overtaken you, you're not walking the way that you ought to, with wisdom and the fear of the Lord, you'd like the prayers and help and encouragement of your brethren, you have that opportunity tonight. In just a few moments as we're singing, you can come forward, let us know what's been bothering you, the sin that's in your life. If you'd like to confess that, we might be able to pray for you and encourage you in your walk to help avoid those things that come upon you. If we can be of assistance to you in any way, we ask that you let that be known while we now stand and sing.